Cambria Community Services District Board of Directors meeting will come back to order. For those of you who weren't here when we convened the meeting at 12 o'clock, we've been in closed session discussing anticipated litigation regarding the geotechnical project that is proposed for the Santa Rosa Creek Beach. Is there a report from closed session?
No, President Sanders. There's nothing to report.
Thank you, Council. With that, we will move to the first public comment period. Madam Clerk, help me out. Were any of these for the public comment period?
I don't believe
Apparently
so.
Not. I have no request to speak during the first public comment period. Is there? All right. Come up, please.
On is the actual wording of the resolution of the geotech, and as discussed last month. My public comments are to address the action of the board president to extend the official comment period as declared in the resolution for an additional 9 days without any notice to the public nor vote of the board. The resolution clearly states the comment period. Here it is, ended February 16th. The Governor's Office of Planning and Research states in a letter to the CCSD the review period closed on February 18th. During February 25th CCSD meeting, 6 email comments sent to the CCSD after the close of the comment period, as declared in the resolution, were allowed to become part of the official record of the negative declaration of the geotechnical investigation. I will add that these comments were the only yes comments to the project. 22 private citizens and 7 agencies all complied with the official comment deadline. Their comments all arrived at the CCSD office or at FIRMA before February 16th. I turned in my written comments prior to the February 16th date in the resolution. I would have liked more time to complete my comments. However, I followed the rules and turned them in before the end of the comment period. No notice was given to me that I had 9 extra days to comment. I purchased all the official comments from the CCSD. In the packet were 3 of the late email comments, dated February 24th and 25th. I paid 20 cents for each of those late comments. I am asking the board to remove all the late comments that have been allowed to become part of the official record or amend the resolution to reflect that the comment period actually ended February 25th. If you decide against amending the resolution, then I would like my 60 cents back. As I consider the late emails not part of the official record and therefore should not have been included in the packet I purchased. And they were all waitlist people, by the way.
Let me, while you're at the lectern there, let me make a couple of comments. When a CEQA document goes out for public review, and that's what it is, public review, that does not foreclose anybody coming to the meeting at which that document is considered and give
right here. And included were some of those emails that you refer to. They are now included in the official record. I want them removed.
When the board considers the negative declaration, at that time, you'll have opportunity to speak to all of the comments that were made.
That's not the point I'm trying to make. You have included in the official record comments after the deadline date. The governor's office.
That is not a deadline. That's what I'm trying to tell you. It's a review process. A document goes out for review. Members of the public have an opportunity to make comment, review the document. Public agencies have the same opportunity. When that document is then considered by the board, was advertised as a hearing. It didn't have to be, but it was advertised as a hearing, and we are permitted to take additional testimony, and that's what we did.
I'm sorry, but I think that under CEQA, you are absolutely wrong.
Okay.
Here's your resolution.
Well, that's fine.
It says the deadline is the 16th. Either you change that resolution and expand it, okay, then everybody in this town can now make more comments. You didn't give public notice. We have an attorney here, and I believe that you are wrong. I'm sorry, Mr. President.
Well, you're entitled to your opinion, but you're not entitled to your own facts. Thank you. With that, we will move on to the agenda review. Are there any items that are to be pulled from the consent calendar and considered separately, or any other modifications to the agenda? Hearing none, the agenda stands as published. With that, we will move to acknowledgments and presentations. Under special reports, we'll have a report from Commander Ben Hall of the Sheriff's Department.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me. I'm Ben Hall. I'm commander of the Coastal Patrol Division. We handle the Sheriff's Patrol from Avila Beach up to the Monterey County line. This last 30 days, we handled 241 calls for service, took 34 reports, compared to last year, same period of time, 201 calls for service and took 40 reports. Of significance, really, we had our usual small amount of various miscellaneous traffic, a credit card fraud, and a juvenile incident. We had about 11 domestic cases. 10 of them were one family, so we're trying to down that way. So that's what they were doing to earn money. It's not terribly unusual. During certain times, we'll see someone with a bright idea, and they'll go out and take aluminum, and they'll break it up, and then make it into scrap, and then sell it as scrap. So it took us, actually, we responded fairly well. I mean, the first cases was on the second. Then we actually, you know, started investigating a couple days later, and then we're able to make two arrests on the 8th. And then 2 days after that, we're able to make one more arrest in this particular case. So we haven't had any more of these statute thefts since we made those three arrests. So that's all I have, unless you have any questions.
Any questions of Commander Hall?
Yeah, Commander, I'd heard that there's an area in Cambridge, possibly several, where people are having their trucks broken into. I guess things like tools and things been stolen. I just wonder if that's something that you folks are working on.
I'm not familiar with that. It didn't come out in the report or reported it. We had what we did have was some thefts from vehicles in Cayucas. And in that particular case, one evening, there's some folks coming through town, and they stole items from a number of vehicles there. And then they were caught trying to do the same thing in Morro Bay. We've had the same sort of problem where they come in and have numerous victims, reported victims, up in San Miguel. But I'm looking at this report, and please give me a call if I... Report doesn't show that we've had any of the vehicles thefts that occurred in this last 30 days up here. And I said I had a chair taken from one residence, cash from a cash box. That was kind of more of an internal thing, I believe. And someone reported mail taken out of the mailbox. That's the only thing I show as being thefts like that.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions of Commander Hall? Thank you, Commander.
Okay, thank you.
Appreciate it. That takes us to managers and board reports. We'll have a report from the general manager.
Okay, thank you. Just a couple of things. You'll see the Van Skoyek Federal Advocacy report attached to the general manager's report. And since this report was submitted at publication March 17th, I have received a message from Greg Burns who indicates that Representative Capps released her fiscal year 11, but I make mention of the fact that they met as a commission on Tuesday, March 2nd, and they'll meet again on Tuesday, April 6th here at the Cambria Vets Hall. Moving on to finance, Al reports that there were no disbursements in totaling $100,000 in the month of February. The local agency investment fund balance as of February 28th was $4,525,890. This is an increase of $50,000 from January 31st this year. And then from a year ago, it's an increase of roughly $225,000. And Al continues to break those lay funds down and what they represent. Moving along to Mark's fire chief's report. He reports under operations that the fire department conducted a selection process for the members who might attend paramedic school. Excuse me, this is under the recent grant that we received that fully pays for this. Thanks goes out to the oral interview board who volunteered their time to come up here and work with Mark, and that would be Battalion Chief Rick Keith from the Grover Beach Fire Department, Captain Paramedic Keith Agson from Atascadero Fire Department, and then Dr. Paul, ooh, I'm going to mess up this name, Giorgio from Sierra Vista Hospital and Cuesta College Paramedic Program. They helped evaluate the candidates that we have on staff, and those folks that were selected to receive the training, again funded by that grant, were Lieutenant Jonathan Gibson, Engineer Sean Weber, Firefighter Sean Horton, and Firefighter Matt Brody. Mark also mentions that the fire department, CAL FIRE, and the Cambria Fire Safe Focus Group recently embarked on processing and compiling a community wildfire protection plan for the community. It was a process that was facilitated by retired San Luis Obispo City Fire Chief Bob Newman. It will identify specific strategies for wildfire management in and around Cambria. And implementation of the plan will also open up expanded opportunities for grant funding projects related to wildfire safety, which is a great thing because Mark and Ben Bohr and others have been very successful in getting a lot of the grant funding for some of the wildfire cleanup, particularly on CCSD properties. Mark also reminds that with this spring forward time change, it's time to change the battery in your smoke detector, and anyone in the community who needs assistance can certainly contact the CCSD Fire Department at 927-6240, and they can help you out. And then I was going to turn it over to Bob Gressens just to provide you with utilities and a district engineer's report.
Thank you, Tammy. Just very briefly, the well levels are full. I didn't have a chance to get the charts into this report, but they are all at the normal levels you'd expect at this time of year, the fluctuations in the distribution system. So Jim coordinated that installation. It's running very well, and it should make the equipment last longer as well as improve the performance and stabilize the pressure in that particular pressure zone area. We did have an emergency break up on Pembroke, as probably many people are aware of. That was on it was early morning of the 26th of February late evening, early morning of the 27th of February. In that case, a hillside had slid away, and pipes that were in the street there fell apart as a result of that, and our water and wastewater crew did emergency repairs to get service back to the couple of homes that were impacted up there, as well as to keep the sewer flowing downhill properly. We're still waiting to hear from the county on its timing to repair the well so we can make those fixes permanent. That's just a brief report of that. Other than that, I can say that most of my time since the last meeting has been spent on a desalination project and trying to work with the Army Corps on that and developing those types of responses and so forth and just coordinating further with the Army Corps. I'd be glad to talk about any other projects that might be on people's minds, but that pretty much sums up my report for this month.
Any questions of either the district engineer or the general manager?
Just a quick one. Bob, did we get a grant for the VFDs from PG&E? Was that?
Yeah, I don't know if Jim's here today. I know he got an $800 rebate back on that, and there was some money through PG&E on that effort because it does save on energy. So he did get some money back on that.
And hopefully the era of clanking pipes are over for Lamert, is that?
Yeah, when I observed that thing operating, it was very smooth. When you start the pumps, they start off at a slow speed and gradually ramp up, which is very nice. It's a good installation.
Director McKinnon, question?
Yeah. General Manager, question. When you were in Washington, why did not a representative of Army Corps meet with the various people in Washington?
They were scheduled the next week.
So have they met?
They've already met. They followed
successful.
Behind us.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And it was a successful meeting.
It came in a rousing second. And so Ed Ebbs from Napomo Community Service will be representing the special district's at the LAFCO as the regular board member. He's very well qualified for 4 years, he sat as the alternate there, and has filled in since Barbara Mann from Oceano Field. They have an archaic procedure in that they now have to fill the alternate's position, and they're going to try to do it through a selection committee, but they seem to never be able to get a quorum in the selection committee, so we may have to go through another election, and I would appreciate support for that if we come in. So,
absolutely. Well, condolences, Merle, but it sounds like a very well-qualified person was elected, so we'll be well-represented. Thank you for running.
And his name is Ed Eby, just for clarification. Yeah, sorry. I just didn't want his name to be mispronounced if he caught this taping. So.
Any other board member or committee reports? Hearing none, we'll move on to the consent calendar. Would the general manager please read the consent calendar items?
Yes. Item 7A is to approve the expenditures for the month of February 2010. 7B is to approve the minutes of the Board of Directors meeting February 25th, 2010. 7C is to consider adoption of Resolution 11-2010 declaring a public nuisance for the annual fire hazard fuel reduction program. And 7D is to consider adoption of Resolution 12-2010 scheduling a public hearing to approve the water and wastewater standby or availability charges for fiscal year 2010-2011.
Is there a motion to approve the consent calendar?
I'll make a motion to approve the consent calendar.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to approve the consent calendar. All those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. That takes us to item 8, hearings and appeals. 8A is consideration of adoption of Resolution 10-2010, adopting Santa Rosa Creek Beach Geotechnical Investigation Environmental Clearance Negative Declaration. Is there a staff report?
Just a brief one. Since the last time we met, the fiscal impact section has changed by additional services that are required with regard to the work that we're coordinating with FIRMA consultants in providing or preparing responses and doing some additional research and investigation.
Among them would be comments that are still being considered and analyzed. There's a big jurisdictional issue with regard to who owns this project. And a number of other issues that I think merit a continuance.
Very good. Thank you for your reports. We will now hear from those who have indicated a desire to speak on this issue. The first is from Jim Ensley.
Yes, thank you for your time and efforts that you do for us. First of all, I want to thank the CCSD staff and board for your continued efforts to provide Cambria alternative water source. And I encourage you to continue your path that you have chosen and proceed as quickly as possible to make it become a reality. I know that choosing the Army Corps of Engineers was the right thing and choice for you in determining this goal and accomplishing your task. I believe that this is the right thing for Cambria and for the people who live here. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ensley. The next request to speak is from Tony Rotolo.
Thanks to the board for giving me a chance to address you today. My support is for the desal project going forward. I think it's very important for a community that I care about. I do have an environmental background. I have been involved with orchid species societies from around the world and in touch with habitat destruction and encroachment and burning of habitat and trying to educate the public in some way, about the importance of environmental issues. And I believe that a lot of you've heard of the debate against desalination, and I believe that a lot of that debate is, to some extent, environmentally based, but to a large extent, no growth for the Central Coast. I think that's the 800-pound gorilla in the room. So I would just like to thank you all for doing a job that is really tough in this environment. It's, you know, we're...
I hope I pronounced your name correctly.
You did not butcher it at all.
No. I didn't?
You didn't, no.
I did it right. Great.
You did it right. In fact, good. I was going to introduce myself. So anyway, my name is Cassandra Salapata-Smets, and I've been a property owner in Cambria since 1989. I felt it was important to take off from work today, which happens to be at Warner Brothers in Burbank, and make my voice heard. As such, I thought it important to come this afternoon and recognize and offer my support to the CCSD's long-envisioned plan of providing alternative water to the community of Cambria. Though the hills are green and they're beautiful and the wildflowers are blooming, we all recognize the dry summer months are ahead. And I want to encourage the CCSD to continue to be proactive and move ahead efficiently and quickly in making the desal plant a reality. And that, of course, starts with the test wells. So thank you very much.
Thank you for your comments. Appreciate it. The next request to speak is from Shale Hansen.
Yes, my name is Shale Hansen, and I live at 1981 Benson Avenue. I bought a lot up here in late 1990s and was looking forward to building on that lot. Unfortunately, due to a delay and a moratorium, I was unable to do so, and I ended up buying a home here. But I also do have the lot. I am completely in support of the desal plant, and I'm looking forward to seeing its construction someday. I guess I'm kind of a frustrated property owner, though, and it's taken so long to build a simple plant, which is really a fairly simple plant, to provide water to the city of Cambria. Thank you very much. I appreciate your listening to me.
Thank you. Appreciate your comments. The next request to speak is from Jim Cressens.
Thank you. I'm Jim Crescenzi.
Crescenzi, I'm sorry.
That's fine. It is an unusual name. My wife, Elaine, and I have resided in Cambria since 2000. I have tended to avoid CCSD meetings, I apologize, and political controversy, which... My assessment of the arguments against desal is that they are, by and large, contrived protest against any growth in Cambria. The zero growth movement, or what I would term Cambrians in perpetual protest, has done the community a considerable disservice. The drop in local employment and the stagnant local economy can be attributed in part to this policy of perpetual protest and the resulting stagnation. In fact, a limited growth in housing, say 30 to 40 houses per year, for example, would have minimal impact on the environment and would improve people's lives in Cambria. I also strongly support the right of lot owners with water positions to build on their lots in a reasonable time frame, even if that is 15 years out for the higher number of positions. Cambria has a clear obligation to facilitate this modest level of building in our community. Finally, I submit that a comprehensive water management plan, including desal, has the potential to support reduced extraction of underground water in times of drought, which can benefit the environment and steelhead population in particular. It would be most helpful, and I think this is really the point of my standing up today, if Cambrians could seek means by which they cooperate and thereby support an improved environment, the realization of the rights of lot owners, and a vibrant local economy. And I also want to thank the board for all of their good work. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The next request to speak is from Pamela Thompson.
Uh, Good afternoon again.
Afternoon.
I've lived here since 1980. My husband's grandfather bought a lot here in 1927. We've had complications with this no-growth business. I want to say first that I'm for every kind of water preservation that's at all sensible. I have a low-flow system, xeriscape planting, drip system, and I asked for permit for an underground cistern some time ago. I was told I couldn't have one. I could only have one above ground. Who wants an industrial-looking cistern above ground in her garden? Nobody. To that case again. How much can we conserve when we don't have any? I'd like to call to your attention, just in case you haven't seen it, which seems unlikely, the Economist issue of October 31, 2009. There's an article about cheaper desalinization, a process that has been developed by a pair of Canadian engineers. I will leave this with your clerk. Thank you.
Thank you. Regarding the cistern, the district has no rule that would prohibit
well, I was
you
told
from
I couldn't have
putting
one.
It underground. But
they sent a guy out and he told me I couldn't have one. I could put one above ground.
We'll check that out and
please
get back
do.
To you.
Seems very sensible to me to have cisterns all over town.
Absolutely. Thank you. Appreciate it. The next request to speak is from John Ellers.
Mr. President, directors, thank you very much for having me. I'm a Cambria resident. And I, like all of the speakers ahead of me, applaud you in your efforts and support your pursuit of the desal plant. I think every thinking person wants all of us to be prudent stewards of our resources. However, I find it obvious that some people can turn the tools of that into weapons, and I think that is just morally corrupt. Thank you.
Thank you for your input. Next request to speak is from Jim Reagan.
Thank you. I want to echo what people have said before, but particularly I was, before I moved to Cambria 10 years ago this month, so I'm a young person, or at least a recent resident compared to some of the other speakers, but I was a consultant to the Los Angeles District of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers for 30 years, and so I'm confident in my working with them over that time that you chose the right organization. It's a very thorough, highly professional organization. I totally support the desal plant as the best alternative water source, and I commend you and will support you as you go ahead to get this project completed and implemented. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Jim. Appreciate it. The next request to speak is from Harry Farmer.
Obviously, these are very economic uncertain times, but next to the economic uncertainties that are addressing our community, the desalination project is a very important issue. It kind of troubles me a little bit that the way it is being discussed at this time is that you folks, those of you here, you know, sit behind your desks, and those of us stand behind a podium for 3 minutes. As I said, this is probably the most important issue, really, that we're going to be addressing in this community for a long time. I would suggest that perhaps we have some time on a Saturday for a couple of hours, and folks from both sides of this issue, as well as members of the board, other members of the water district, that we meet down at Chamel Park, meet on the beach, put our feet on the sand, and discuss the issue among us in a fairly non-confrontational, face-to-face manner. We all live in this community together, or people that wish to reside here. We all need to speak one-to-one, get to know one another, get to know one another's points of view. Also, I would suggest that we meet here in the Vets Hall also on a Saturday, perhaps for about 5 hours, and have a forum where people, knowledgeable individuals with regard to this issue, pro and con, or just let's just say how we get our water needs met, are here to answer our questions so we can become more knowledgeable in making a decision on this issue. You know, we live here in Cambria. It's a beautiful town. Natural charm, slow pace of life, you know, surrounded by the beauty of nature. There was another divisive issue back in the 1990s where people, it was very contentious, and that was the development of the Fiscalini Ranch. Ultimately, we preserved that spot of natural beauty, and we're very highly regarded as a community for having done so. People that live here, folks that come to travel here, really respect the fact that we, Cambria, stood up and ultimately preserved this beautiful spot for those of us to enjoy for years to come. So now we're considering a desalination, or at least finding a more reliable source of water. And I can understand some of the fear that's taking place in this room after someone just stated, yes, back in the 1860s, we had no water for 2 years. But I would wish to suggest that at least we consider, like our neighbors to the south in Santa Barbara and Morro Bay, where they spent millions of dollars, where the taxpayers, where the residences of that town had to take on the bill like an economic albatross around their neck, and pardon the shorebird pun, by the way, or the metaphor. Or do we want to be known as a forward-looking community that used the latest and green environmentally friendly technologies as a way to deal with our water needs? Thank you very much.
Thank you for your comments. Next request to speak is from Steve Cole.
Steve Cole, I support your desal plan, and I hope you don't delay the test wells. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Steve. The next request to speak is from Dean Helbel.
I'm Dean Helbel. Over 20 years ago, my wife and I were able to come to Cambria to live. We bought our lot in 83, and fortunately I had a friend who said, get on the water list, hire an architect, and get your house built. And fortunately, we managed to do that and start our house in 88, and were able to move in 89. And I've enjoyed our 20-plus years here in Cambria. It's a beautiful place, but I cannot agree with one of the previous speakers who kind of wants to keep the status quo. I mean, one of the early things that we did when we first came to Cambria, we'd go around and you'd see a house being built, and you'd want to go in and see how did that house, what was new, what was something that you'd want to do or something you would not want to do. It was a real kind of a sport. It was wonderful. We enjoyed it. I enjoy the, when I hear kids having a good time in the neighborhood, I enjoy it. But there's a lot less of that in Cambria now because the people who are carpenters and workers and so forth, they're not here. There's no fresh, there is some fresh blood coming to Cambria, but not enough. I enjoy new people coming to Cambria, and I think Cambria needs it. So I want to applaud you and the work that you're doing, and I want to concur the progress that you're making, and I hope that you're able to continue with the projects. I talked to Peter Talcott there oft times and understand what is going on now, and being a retired engineer, I pretty well understand what you're doing, and I approve. And I just wanted to say, like, my house just below the house, there's a sign up in front. I know there's a man that has owned that lot for a number of years and has wanted to build. There's a sign in front now that the lot is for sale. And I empathize with people like that. So I hope that you're able to continue and succeed in the endeavor to build a desal plan and do it very soon and quickly and efficiently. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mike Dill is next.
Good afternoon. My name is Mike Dill. After the last meeting here, I thought about what the opposition was saying about this project. Their concerns about the environment issues and the possible damage to the beach. If this area is so fragile and sensitive, then maybe we should look at putting a fence up around the entire area. No one should be allowed to walk on the beach, to look at the tide pools, to scare up the birds. No one, no dogs, no kids, no footprints in the sand. 2 days later, another one of our winter storms blew in. I watch it roll the huge boulders around like marbles. The surge tossed the trees and the driftwoods around like toothpicks. When the huge waves would come crashing in all the way to the estuary and toss the shrubs around by their roots. You look at the beach, and a majority of the sand had been stripped away and pulled back into the sea. What brute force is at work? What a natural destruction. You see no birds. They have flown for safety. Every winter, it's a natural way of cleansing the beaches. By summer, the sand will return, the birds will return, the plants will regrow. The opposition worries about a couple of vehicles being on the beach on the hard-packed sand for approximately 2 weeks. This is not about saving the environment or the wildlife. It's about stopping all growth by all means. We have a legal right to build on our lots. We are not going away. We urge you to move forward with these test wells and to let the project begin, be the beginning of a new Cambria to what it once was, a friendly and prosperous community. One last point. At the beginning of every one of these meetings in this historic Veterans Hall, we all stand and say the Pledge of Allegiance. Has it gotten so generic that we don't really mean it? It's just words being said. It is a pledge we should all abide by and take very seriously. If you've forgotten, the four final words is injustice.
And I certainly can understand their plight. On the other hand, I've been studying this for a while now, and we did have a wonderful forum on March 16th over at the Rubble Bank, which was packed full of people learning more about alternative sources of water that are available. And there seem to be so many unanswered questions for us. We still don't have a good cost-benefit analysis of what would alternative and greener resources cost us, and how viable really are they. And yes, Mr. Sanders, I have read the long water plan of the district. But in that water plan, I still do not see concrete figures. How much would it cost for us to have a pervasive gray water systems? Conservation in tanks, maybe underground, maybe overground. Other pools that we could use. There seem to be a lot of resources that we're not putting effort into looking into, because we have this narrow idea, the only way anybody can build here is if we have desal. I don't think that's true. I'm not convinced. I haven't seen the data. Where is the real cost-benefit analysis here? I just haven't seen the evidence, and I'm keeping on learning more and more about water and more about alternative ways to conserve and preserve the beautiful Cambria. The reason people have been waiting for years to move here is because of what we are. Do we want to destroy that? Do we want to risk poisonous mercury coming into our creek? Do we want to risk possible privatization because we can't afford the possible bill of $30 million that plant will cost us? There's all these unanswered questions and all these alternative resources we have not explored and we do not have the data on. So I would really like to have those unanswered questions answered. And I really love the idea of us all getting together in a room with a really adequate, impartial facilitator, or maybe a team of them. I've seen it done, dialogues across communities where we can voice our opinions. We can hear from the pro-desal, the anti-desal, the people who know about gray water, the people who know about green systems. Get them together and have us spend a day. Isn't that worth 1 day of our time to see if we can get...
...goes through a very lengthy and sophisticated process to weight each one of the alternatives consistent with cost, environmental degradation, if there is any, those kinds of factors. So we've gone through the process. We've also had town hall meetings We've had this Vets Hall packed with people where we've considered all of the different alternatives relative to solving the supplemental water supply problem here in Cambria. When I ran for this seat the first time in 2002, the major plank of my platform was we've had enough studies. We had 20 years worth of studies. We've got to get something done. And for my two cents worth, I just don't think it's time to go back and start studying again. We have all of the studies that we need. Any other board comments on that? All right. The next request to speak is from Deborah Dill.
Could I just, before she speaks, there's
yes.
one thing that we should consider when any alternative water supply is considered. A typical water tank is going to cost you $1 a gallon. That's a very minimum cost. So if you use, say, 1,000 gallons, that's $1,000 for that much water. In a year, I think a typical family uses, well, let's see, I'm not quite sure how much water we use in a year, but it's in the thousands of gallons. So if you had the storage, you'd need to be spending thousands of dollars just for your tank to supply you for 1 year, and then you have a place to put it. And every time that comes up, you have to realize the district has to balance whether it spends money on multiple tanks or whether it spends money on a project. And when you evaluate these, you know, that's where you come to a single project, which we are. Thank you.
Yeah. Please. Go ahead.
Hello.
Hello.
I'm Deborah Dill. I live in Paso Robles. I'm a member of UNLOC, and I've had my lot for about 25 years. I'm getting old, so it's time to move on this. First of all, I want to
Time marches on.
I know. Into a lot of meetings. First of all, I want to thank all of you guys because you've done a wonderful job for us, and I feel we're finally getting somewhere, and I really appreciate it. And my point is today that disturbing the birds and moving some sand and walking your dog is not the true issue here. The issue is that vacant lot next to the opposition. And it's my lot, of course, and the eventual quality of life if we don't have any water. And two final thoughts, thou shalt not lie and love thy neighbor. Please proceed with the test wells. I appreciate it.
Thank you. The next request to speak is from Mihaela Burton.
President, members of the board, thank you. Did we have the pledge today?
Yes, we did.
We did? Must have been concentrating. Well, the first comment I would like to make is that we don't have a desalination project. So why are we commenting on that? This comment period is only for the drilling project. It's about the environmental consequences of the drilling project. I'd like to say that I'm not opposed to growth, but I am opposed to drilling and co-opting our public beaches that are reserved for the people, particularly the most environmentally people that can't really afford to do many things, and so the beaches really are very important to them. We have all these agencies and very qualified people saying that this drilling project is not environmentally sound. So when all these people keep saying, oh, I want this project, I want this project, I want this project, have they even read one document? I can't believe when I hear their words. The Department of the Interior, do you even know what that is? United States Department of Commerce, NOAA, State Fish and Game, they've all said this project cannot go forward in the state it's in. It has nothing to do with growth. We have alternatives. I've suggested alternatives that would allow every person without a legal right to water to build. We have two reservoirs we could draw on. I have a cistern underground. I don't understand where this idea comes from. There's cisterns underground all over town. My final comment is this. I'm so tired of people on the wait list that don't live here, that write the nasty letters, call me and my colleagues' names week after week. This is what your ordinance says. Cambria Ordinance Number 225. The placement of a proposed...
Just want to correct a couple of things that were just said. The inference was made that a number of public agencies oppose the geotechnical project. That's not true. A number of public agencies have commented, which they do routinely on projects like this, and it's up to the Corps of Engineers to adopt mitigation measures to address those environmental impacts. So that's a process for the Corps of Engineers and the Coastal Commission to take care of. Secondly, with regard to the legal right to water, I think the United States Supreme Court might disagree with the lady who just spoke. Yes.
I'd like to make two comments. One, you've addressed just a moment, but I think it's important. Because I read through and actually the article in the Cambrian, and it is that. They passed and made comments regarding the document that was being put together for this project, which is the well project at Shamel Beach. So that did not include, and I do not think they said there was anything that was detrimental that they could see. They were asking for further information or clarification. And just a fine point to your comment, it's as the Corps reviews it, since they're the agency who are putting this project together and implementing this project, when they review the comments, they will make what necessary investigations or opinions and that they will do whether there needs to be any mitigation of something. Because if there's no issue to mitigate, then they will not need to mitigate it. It is a technical undertaking. The Corps of Engineers has technical people. They do this all across the country. For your information, for the public's information, the Corps is doing two projects, one in Morro Bay. I think people might have seen the dredges in the harbor of Morro Bay. It's a $1,590,000 project. They're dredging in Morro Bay for the harbor, and that material is being put on the beaches north of Morro Rock along that beach. I guess, what's the name of the community that's right there?
The Strand.
Excuse me?
The Strand.
Right, the Strand, up along the Strand. So they are well aware of their environmental requirements to do that type of work, to work on a beachside. They had very large pieces of equipment along the beach for several months. They're getting near completion. They are also undertaking a $2 million project in the harbor of Santa Barbara, at 20 miles north, and rebuilding beaches along the Goleta coast. So they are well aware of what's necessary. They are well aware of the requirements for sensitivity to the environment. Interestingly enough, by the way, where they're applying these dredge material from Morro Bay along the Strand Beach there, north of Morro Rock, there are signs, and that is a plover nesting area, yet the Corps is doing the work in a careful manner and apparently gotten all of the necessary permits to do that work, and I believe that they'll do that for the community. If I could take a few minutes, because another minute or so?
Sure.
Because, we've talked about it, and I think more people than I surely have been here longer and fought for water supply issues, and that's where I want to bring. We know that our groundwater is dependent on Santa Rosa Creek wells and the San Simeon Creek wells. Wells are taking water out of a drainage basin, which can only be recharged from the rain. And there has been and there will always be some adverse regional water weather conditions, and we do whether we hit a year drought or a multi-year drought, and the multi-year droughts are the ones that cause the biggest drop in what's considered safe yield. There is issues about water reuse, there's issues of cisterns, but I think eloquently the lady that was here before, you can't conserve what you don't have. You can't store in a cistern water that drops in January and expect it to be there in October. Otherwise, we wouldn't have these problems. You can't build a big enough storage, and when storage facilities, which are the ones called reservoirs and dams, are proposed, you can't do those because of the environmental impact of those, which is known. So what we end up with is water cutbacks are required, water use surcharges, and when necessary, and it may come on a multi-year drought, rationing. this is not a viable community if you're into these things on multiple years. And I've only been here 5 years, and we've had the surcharges, and there was the surcharge year was very bad, and it could have been got to a point we went to the next stage, which would have been rescuing. The project at hand is a wells, a geological, hydrogeological investigation. We want to know what kind of sands are there, what kind of gravels, what kind of soils, what's the gradation of what kind of well we can have. There'll be three wells, potentially, approximately, to check a project if we don't have a water source. Disappointingly, we had the same issue when we spent a lot of money on the San Simeon Creek area and started talking about what size the buildings are, what type the plant was, and then find out you can't get a water source. This project is a prerequisite. It is an exploration. And the investigation is limited in scope. It's also transitory, and whether it's 2 or 3 weeks of active environment, if there's a well that's left there buried and is operated intermittently to get samples and check the drawdown over a year period, it's going to be something that's transitory. They'll be filled later. This is not the long-term impact of building a structure, of building a plant, in that any effect of our exploration investigation for this project that we're talking about, which is a core project, and will have no residual effect on the site environment. And the investigation will bear out whether the plant is viable or the withdrawal of the water in that means, beachside wells are viable for a project which might be a desalinization plant. So I think, like I said, Ms. Burton has pointed out, the discussion here is the creek. When you look at the impact or lack of impact on the beach, the transitory nature, and, it's wonderful what was brought out by another gentleman 4 or 5 months ago when I guess it was the October storm, blew out about 200 to 300 feet of the sandbar of that beach in a matter of hours when we had those heavy rains, because it was 14 inches up on the hill. So this is it's the flux that the beaches go through on the natural environment are much more affected of the what's there than what our explorations would be. So I think that addresses some
thank you.
Of the issues.
Well
and,
put.
And the comment about $30 million, I don't believe that's anywhere. And I think Bob Greshens has repeatedly brought up, and I think it was October of last year, talked about the cost of the plant and whether it was 13 to 15 because of inflation, and depending on going for solar, it might go up around 17. But the idea of a $30 million expenditure for this plant is ludicrous at this point.
I agree. It's a complete red herring. It's a complete misstatement.
Yes, I realize that this is supposed to be about the test wells, and specifically whether we should ask for a bypass to an EIR, a negative declaration. But I raise the question, why are we sinking or talking about sinking test wells that would be seen as testing whether a desal plant is viable and then taking the possibility of the desal plant off the table for discussion. They are tied up. Now, I have several specific questions that have been asked of the CCSD before and have never been directly answered. We've been told time and again, go to the master plan, it's there. I don't think the answers to these questions are there, but it also should be the board's job to keep the public informed proactively rather than sending us individually to seek out information to an obscure master plan. So I'm asking publicly for these specific questions to be answered, and they're all fiscal. Number one, I'd like to know the dollar amount of funding set aside by any agency of the state of California or the federal government toward the cost of building a desalination plant for Cambria. Will such funds solely be designated for a desalination plant, or can they be applied to an alternate water production or capture facility? What is the current cost estimate of a desalination facility for the community? If this is not known, what are the lowest and highest estimated costs of construction? If for some reason the CCSD does not have this information, A, when did the CCSD last obtain a construction price for a desal plant? And B, what was that price? If there is a difference between the government funding of a desalination facility and total cost, how does the CCSD plan to fund it, Greg, to a desal facility that the CCSD has investigated for providing Cambria with sufficient water during a four-month drought? What would be the maintenance costs of any alternative to a desal facility that the CCSD has investigated? What would be the operating cost of any alternative to a desal plant that the CCSD has investigated? Finally, has the CCSD either in open meeting or closed committee considered the privatization of Cambria's water operations, that is, selling the town's water operations to a private corporation, to make up any shortfall between the cost of construction, operation, maintenance, and available government funding, plus whatever citizen funding, bond issues, increased tax, users' fees? In short, has such privatization ever been considered by CCSD board or staff? And I think the Cambria citizens need to know the specific answers to those questions. Thank you.
Thank you for your comment. Let me... You asked a number of questions, and I don't think we have time to answer them all here, but I do take issue with your characterization of the Water Master Plan as being obscure. This board, previous boards going back, probably 8 years, have considered the Water Master Plan. It was finally adopted in 2007, I believe, 2008 perhaps. It is not obscure. It went through many workshops, hearings here before the board. It's posted on the website. It's accessible. And I'm sorry, Mr. Figler, but it has most of the answers that you're looking for. They're in the document. So I urge you to go back and read the Water Master Plan. And I think you'll find that it does have most of the answers to questions you're looking for. Secondly, you characterized my comment about being able to finance a desal plant without impacting the ratepayers and taxpayers as part of the financing plan. It's not part of the financing plan. It's an idea that I have that I think has merit, but it hasn't been considered by the board yet. We have to approach desalination one step at a time. Okay. Next request to speak is from Amanda Rice.
Thank you, President Sanders.
You're welcome.
First, I'd like to say amen to Harry Farmer. We could easily be a model community, green community, forward-looking, and I definitely, for one, support and would welcome a local government body that invites people to discussion and participation of what the community wants to be. Second, people who own lots on the wait list should not necessarily have to support desal in order to be able to get service from the CCSD. This is where the other alternatives could come into play. This is where the question of how much water is enough water becomes an issue, because if you're allocating 18 units per household, that's a lot more water that you need to supply than what is actually being used by the households that are currently here. Third, as the chair of the North Coast Advisory Council and frequent reader of government documents that probably nobody else really looks that hard at, the North Coast Area Plan specifically states that any desalination plant for Cambria must be publicly owned and run. And that document was passed by the Board of Supervisors, certified by the Coastal Commission, took about 20 years to put together and get done, and a lot of wrangling back and forth between the district and the county and the Coastal Commission to get to that point. So the privatization, while it could be a concern, has to go through the whole process of changing the North Coast Area Plan, which is a very long, protracted process that includes going through the county planning process and then approval by the Coastal Commission. Just to carry on with what former Director Funky Ballou used to do, keep us in mind of where we are. 3,053 days since the moratorium was enacted. That's 8 years and 4 months and 11 days. And a lot has changed because you're much more intimately familiar with the information being members of the board. There's a small group of Cambrians that are very intimately familiar, and a lot of us show up at these meetings and make comments. So I think it's about time that we make sure that the community has an opportunity to have discussion. Valerie Bentz's suggestion of a facilitated deliberation where everybody has an opportunity to get out what they need to get out and information can be shared without it being a head-to-head battle. And the last week's forum information panel at the Rabobank was an example. It's just an indication of how hungry people are to have the discussion on desal. There were two directors that were there, and the engineer, Bob Greshens, was there. There were people there that they really want to know. They want the information. This is a very smart, well-educated community. If you give them the information, they can make conclusions that will probably end up making this community come more together rather than be apart. The last thing I'd like to comment on is that there are many other reasons other than halting development that to oppose desalination. There are other, and I'd argue better, ways to protect the forest and the village atmosphere than to fight an alternative water source, whether it's desalination or something else, or to withhold services from residential lots in the CCSD's service area. I don't think we can afford or sustain using as much water as we want. We need to manage with the water that we need. And that's all policy, and I urge this board to engage this community in discussions about that. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Director D'Amico, I'll let you respond first, and then I'll respond.
Yeah, I want to clarify, and you know, when you're an engineer, you learn to focus. And one of the things I find, and I think we just had another red herring issue, someone says, for some reason, thinks that there were discussions or there might have been, has privatization been considered? Which then the second Brown Act issues, there's been no talk and even discussion. We are so early in the project, if you talk about the larger project, which is the desalination of alternates, the supplemental water supply, that's not something even to be discussing at this point. And it hasn't been discussed. The idea, too, that, and I believe we had as you pointed out, they had the board. The prior board did have workshops, and it was very, as the people in the consular area said, frank and open discussions, which means pretty heated discussions went had during that period, because that allowed the two discussions to take positions. People will always take. There are a number of people will pretty much always be on the other side of the fence on certain things, but we will proceed that. But to talk about a project, meaning the true desalination plant, the location of it, the sizing of it, and the use of it, without knowing that we can get the water supply to the plant is actually too early to do that. But the idea that was just raised that we haven't educated and there's not enough information available on the website for someone to educate themselves, and those must be the supporters, as opposed to the people who are educated and are against the project, I find a little distasteful at this point. And that seems to be the issue. When the discussion is why it shouldn't be done and it's environmentally unsound or financially unsound, there's no data enough for them. But yet, to realize that all of the information that's in the environmental impact, the master plan document, the financial plan that was put out two or three years ago, it's there. You may not agree with their analysis, and there probably are areas that I might not agree on certain issues. But they were done, they were carried out, they were analyzed, and decisions were made. It's a process that we go through, and that's the process of government, as we say. But the community has been well informed and well available to information, and I've seen Bob Greshens respond to many questions that he received, whether it be with emails at the Rabobank or at these meetings, and they are in the documents. Thank you.
Thank you, Director D'Amico. I just want to say I really, quite frankly, resent the inference that somehow we're not in touch with the community and that we haven't had workshops and so forth. When I was elected in prior technology, had virtually no constraints on growth. In other words, there was the possibility that the plant could produce just about an unlimited amount of water, and there was no way to put any brakes on growth if people lined up for building permits, for intent to serve letters and for building permits. In fact, I believe Director Villeneuve is in the audience, and he was one of the directors who opposed that technology that was proposed in 1996 for the very reason that I just indicated. And what Director Villeneuve realizes, however, did realize then and realizes now, is that that doesn't mean that desal is all bad. There are ways to address the growth issue. So when I got together with this group of citizens, we sat down and we hammered out the build-out reduction program. Without costing the taxpayers and the ratepayers in this town very much money, the build-out reduction program has been wildly successful. We have retired how many lots, Madam General Manager?
400, without considering approximately 30 that are going through the process right now.
Okay, 430 lots that were in the inventory and that someday, theoretically, could have been built on are now out of the system. So we had workshops, we had meetings, we had two big town hall meetings here. There was one town hall meeting on the build-out reduction program where the hall was full, and there was virtual unanimity of support for it. So please, don't come here and tell us that we're out of touch and that we don't listen to our constituents and that we need to have workshops and so forth. We realize that. What we're talking about now is a simple geotechnical project. That is it. Once that is over with, and if desal looms in Cambria's future, then there will be workshops, town hall meetings, input, and so forth in terms of how this plant is going to be built, what the plans and specifications are going to be, et cetera, et cetera.
If I may, President Sanders, I just want to make clear, I didn't mean to imply that there had not been information, that there is not information available, that there had not been workshops, that all of these things hadn't occurred.
it's been bring that need.
And if
at
we
all.
If just the determination is made by the Corps of Engineers that the technology that we propose to use is feasible, there will be lots of opportunity for community input. The next request to speak is from Ron Crummett.
Good afternoon, Mr. President, members of the board. So much to say in so little time. I told Amanda as a school teacher I was very glad that I never had to give her a book report. She's quite accurate on and detailed on what she gives. I have to agree with her and Harry, too, that it's we need to keep the communication going between the board and everybody in the community and get all different feelings and outputs from everybody involved. Some young lady mentioned that they're concerned about a risk of mercury. Well, I think there's also a risk of fire danger and drought danger. I've mentioned this before again and again. But we live in a forest without having to go on and explain that fire danger. And we do need a strong water support to support any possible fire that might break out. We've been very lucky so far. We also are in, it seems hard to imagine, in a drought danger because of all of the water that's been coming down, the wonderful rains that we're having. But and I'll reiterate again, and I've said it before, and bear with me, but my wife and I lived here in the 80s, and we did have 5 years of drought. And there was no water in the streams. There were no fish. The lawns and the gardens were drying up. There was just no water. And there seems to be some thinking that, well, the water will always come. Well, we can get it from alternative sources. The biggest alternative source is that big Pacific Ocean out there, and that's the most dependable source I think that we've got around. Thank you, Mr. President. You stole my thunder. I was going to mention just what you said. The desal plant should be looked on, I think, as a good, positive thing, because not only will it afford us a dependable source of water, but it will, because of its, and you're not going to be able to build. There's nothing else to build on. So the desal plant is in many ways a win-win situation for all sides, I firmly believe. I want to thank you all for your help on this. I wish you good luck and Godspeed on the drilling that is necessary, the short-term drilling out there that's not going to be months and months and months and months. It'll be done quickly and be done fast, and we'll know whether or not we can even build a desal plant at that location. I have to say, to keep my happy home, that my wife Helga agrees and says, as along with me, continue going forward with the desal plant, and much luck. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Crummett. The next request to speak is from Ann Sikowski.
Hello.
Hello.
I'm new to the board. I am one of the citizens that hadn't spoken or addressed the board concerning the water issue, except for a couple of people that I met. It was very nice for them to be at the gathering on last week. I have a question, and one of my questions has come out of one of the studies that I have been reading about and then hearing about, and I checked with the Coastal Commission, and there's a fact that concerns me greatly. The fact is that out of, I think, 17 projects of desal plants along the coast of California have failed. There are no operating desal plants that are using ocean water as the source of water at this particular time. So I'm not sure that I'd like to hear the answer, but I don't feel comfortable you giving me the answer right away, because I don't know if all answers can be answered in this very short
pickup truck.
Explorer.
I'm sorry, Ford Explorer.
Yeah, it has a Raiders
Oakland Raiders emblem on the window. Okay, I'm sorry. Go
that's,
ahead.
That's fine. Okay. But I'm not here to debate. I came here for the first time to see what this process is all about. It's interesting. I noticed that when the landowners spoke of the desal plant, there was no correction as to that's not, we're not at that point yet. And then I hear, which is interesting, all of the people that are speaking for let's try to see if there's something else out there, then there is almost a defense. It's almost like I'm seeing a them and an us, and I'm seeing also some screens going up and some defense posturing, which concerns me quite a bit, because I really feel that it does not have to be that way. I have to tell you that I was very fortunate in the early 1980s to be part of Seattle, Washington's program for recycling. And we basically had to teach the citizens of Seattle how to recycle. And that was a very large process that took place. But it did. In fact, today, I think Seattle is one of the models for recycling. That didn't happen when there's such a polarity in topics that I see at this point. And then I really think that's all I have to say at this time.
Appreciate your comments. Appreciate you coming down and beginning your participation with this process. Let me just say a couple of things. Mm-hmm. Regarding the desalination plants that are up and down the coast,
mm-hmm.
Some are used only in emergencies. Others are used only periodically as a supplemental water source. And I believe virtually all of them are older technology. There has been, over the past few years, a dramatic increase in the efficiency of these plants. There's research mm-hmm. and development going on by mm-hmm. the Navy.
Cow ponds, where the water seeps through to the underground water. So there are...
Understood. Regarding desal plants, the technology has improved dramatically. Not only the membrane technology for the reverse osmosis plants, but also the open ocean water intake technology, where using devices that will prevent the entrainment and entrapment of sea life, these open ocean water systems have become much more environmentally friendly.
Mm-hmm.
Regarding the demeanor of myself, other board members, and so forth, we're about 2 months into this process now. So I think the comments that we've heard from those who oppose desalination, we've heard before. And the frustration is that despite our attempts to get the correct facts out there, we keep hearing the same repetitive misstatements. And that's, I think, very unfortunate. It doesn't mm-hmm. help the process at all. What does help the process is to have the correct facts, and then people can kind of get around those facts and figure out whether or not they agree or they disagree. And that's what mm-hmm. we're trying to encourage here. That's why we're glad you're participating.
Okay. Thank
right.
you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Figler has submitted a second request to speak. Mr. Figler, I'll give you a minute if you want to come up.
What I was asking for before was specific answers to specific questions. Mr. D'Amico gave me what I was asking for.
Good.
He gave me a specific answer to a specific question on privatization. That's great. That's wonderful. That's all that I want. And but I think it does a disservice to the community for the board consistently, and this has been consistent, to say, go to the sites where this information, these answers are found. Essentially, the board, who has been elected by us, is telling roughly 4,000 people to go to those sites and sources when very easily and much more public friendly and much more proactive, you could have a forum that is something that you wouldn't need to, or no one would need to feel defensive about, and just collect questions and say to the public what the answers to the questions are. And my questions were specifically fiscal. And this is data that the board should have if it's considering even spending $733,000 for the test well, which it is, and which you could calm down an awful lot of people by simply doing that rather than asking us to search, each individually search here and there.
Where did you get the information that the board is going to spend $733,000 on the test wells?
Well, that was in the newspaper. It was. Well, it's a figure that...
That doesn't necessarily mean that it's true.
Uh-oh. We got a problem here.
with all due respect to Ms. Tanner here.
It's been said several times and not denied. I think that's important.
Well,
Also...
Mr. Figler, let me stop you there for a second. I mean, it's like asking the question, have you stopped beating your wife?
No,
you
know? It's not at all like that.
We have discussed at least two board meetings the financing for the geotechnical project. It's going to be paid by the Corps of Engineers.
Is the
It's not a CCSD project.
Is the desal plant for which the test wells are potentially being dug, so you can't separate them out. I mean, why dig the wells if you don't have the money for the desal plant?
Mr. Figler, I'm sorry, but again, we've gone through this process a number of times explaining it. We have to first determine whether the technology that has been proposed is going to work. Of all of the technologies available for desal, you've got distillation and reverse osmosis to start with. Then you've got the means of intake for the water. All of those processes have to be investigated to determine whether or not you can feasibly go forward and have a project when you get out at the other end of the pipeline. The Corps of Engineers is undertaking the geotechnical process here, the project, to determine whether or not the technology that has been proposed is feasible. There has been no decision made on whether we're going to have a desal project for Cambria or not. It really kind of hinges on this investigation that the Corps is going to undertake. If the technology that has been proposed is feasible, we'll have workshops. We will get into the real nitty-gritty of how much it's going to cost, where the money's going to come from, and so forth. But right now, we don't have a desal project.
Okay, so what you're saying, if I understand, is we're going to dig the test well. We're going to try to dig the test wells to see if a desal plant is feasible when we don't know, how we're going to fund it, if it is feasible.
If it is feasible, then we will have workshops, board meetings, town hall meetings, lots of citizen input on, first of all, whether or not we're going to have a desal project, and secondly, if we are, how we're going to go forward. But you can't, that discussion until you first find out if what you want to propose is going to be feasible. Director DeMiso.
Just one thing, let's back up for a second. Whether it's 733 or whatever the Corps is spending, and I think that's what you were pointing out, I want to make sure it's the public knows, that is not CCSD money. That is the Corps of Engineers utilizing the federal allocation to the overall project, that portion to do the geotechnical, the right. Hydrogeology.
Which
worst case condition, they go out there and what we thought might have been, they talk about the deep trench of soil.
Right.
For some reason, it's not as deep as we thought. It's not viable to pull it out. That's money they spent. And if there needs to be another exploration or another means of drawing water for a desal, that'll have to come out of the next allocation.
But didn't you just say that whatever they spend will come out of our allocation to build?
It comes from federal funds.
Right, which has been granted to us to build the project.
But you
have
granted it because
we just have less to
build
the project.
It's not being defensive, but we do want to clarify. It's not a CCSD expenditure.
Okay.
It's the United States federal government expending money to prove out what we hope is the future source of water for a desalination plant.
Okay, say the government granted us $4 million to build this plant. The Corps spends $730 million to find out that, yes, it's feasible. Now we only have $3 million and a quarter to spend.
Mr. Fickler, if we go forward with a desal project, we will be getting into those issues in depth.
Okay. Just so long as you keep us informed.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Okay. I have one more request to speak from Randy McDowell.
First of all, I'd like to apologize for my Explorer, the Raider Explorer. It seems to have a mind of its own.
We'll forget you're a Raider fan.
Yeah,
it's okay.
The Super Bowl, maybe I thought it won the Super Bowl. The reason I'm up here, I'm first of all, Randy McDowell. And I look around this room, and, boy, it's hard to recognize any long-term Cambrians. Now, once upon a time, I considered a Cambrian to be over 10 years. Well, I've been in Cambria for a quarter of a century. That's dating me. And, plus, I've seen the drought of the early 80s, and it was nasty. You had political battles. You almost had fist fights in here with dispute. The situation that I look at, and I'm a visual guy. I kind of picture things as they happen, and sometimes they happen, sometimes they don't. And I've, with my experience working in a public entity, a public schooling, I'm not going to mention names, not to invest internally the components to keep the mechanism, the basic mechanics operating and functional is a little bit of my concern. The other thing is understaffing your field techs. They do an exemplary job. I was one of these guys that just, okay, hey, they got a gravy, easy job. Well, it's just the opposite of that. I did a discussion with my wife, Cheryl, and she indicated there's 4,600 hookups. Is that including the motels?
Yeah.
Well, you do basic math. That's 1,500 hookups per man. There's three out there, and these guys still come on a timely fashion, and they don't have a chip on their shoulder, and they do an exemplary job. Where I'm getting at is, and I'm sure you have rolled this over, more manpower out in the field. That's what I'm saying. And investing internally may mean having another person out there or another tech. God forbid if we have a crisis where everything starts breaking and we only have three guys, and I'm sure there's others that are quite capable. However, it's going to be nasty out there because you have all these Band-Aid hookups and repairs throughout the mechanism of Cambria. Been here long enough. I've seen every friggin' street torn up, repatched, and if there's generators, costly generators, equipment, et cetera, that's where your priority needs to be. And I'm one of these guys that I'm on the fence on the D-cell. I need to, like, again, I have to think. I'm a thinker. My wife, you know, she has her opinion. I have my opinion. But I think you need to, really carefully examine not overworking these guys, having the potential of an accident out there because they are trying to maintain 4,500 plus hookups is a recipe for an accident. And I'm concerned for the guys because I've been where they're at, under staff, under budget, and pleading for materials and manpower. And due to powers to be, it was not designated, and consequences happened. Work comp injuries, unnecessary work comp injuries. So I want to put this on record that I hope I'm not going to be back standing here and saying I look in that camera and tell I told you so. So I've been, I have a right to speak. I've been here long enough. I'm a quiet guy, but, today is a little different. Thank you.
Thank you for your comment. Appreciate it. I do have four written comments, one from Joan Coben, one from Marilyn and Don Villeneuve, one from Robert and Alice Beam, one from Roger Robinson, I have five, and one from Christine Landgren, all in support of the board proceeding to adopt the negative declaration. Is there anybody else who has not put in a request to speak who wishes to do so and speak at this time? I see Richard Breen. Yes, sir. Come up.
Mr. President, my name is Pat Child. I did have a slip turned in and may have got overlooked.
Yeah, didn't see it. I'm sorry. I apologize.
Perhaps it was my past politics. I don't know.
No. Not at all.
It's been 14 years, as people pointed out, since I've been to the speaker. Or the microphone in this case. I've been a resident of Cambria since 1989. I've been a past board director. And I've come to the last two meetings regarding what I would call a feasibility study that you're now endeavoring to complete. And it is true that you do not have a project and that you do not have a project description, so therefore the project is just not there. But I encourage the board to move ahead with this feasibility study. And as the gentleman just told us, who mentioned that he considered a Cambria resident 10 years, well, I fit that bill, and I listened to some of the comments, and I go, wow, we've already done that. And we have alternative projects. Wow, we've already studied them. And Mr. Sanders, you and I probably don't always see eye to eye, but you've been right on for me today, bringing those issues back up that, number one, I spoke it for a different reason back in 96 when we had a completed project. We had the engineering studies done. We went to the Coastal Commission in San Francisco and had a 12-0 vote. And for political reasons, and it will get nasty, someone mentioned that they perceive us and them. Just wait till you get closer to the project being completed. There were three directors on that board. Our families were intimidated. They were threatened. They were lied about. The East-West Ranch back then, we've heard accolades that that's been preserved. But there were racial slurs. It can be very ugly. So this time around, I hope it's not. But I do not want to go through another workshop, particularly where we've already had a vote of the community. What project do they want? They voted they wanted the desal project. We have a positive note to hold on to that while over the 14 years technology has certainly changed, we had a project that was approved by the Coastal Commission, so it can be done. When we hear about the alternative Whale Rock Reservoir, Lake Nacimiento, state water, they don't fit Cambria. The reason is cost factors for Whale Rock Reservoir bringing the pipeline all the way up the highway. The head pressure of pumping water from Lake Nacimiento up over the hill is more costly than the desal project. And when you get to your engineering studies, they will give you all that, as you well know. The cost breakdowns will be there. So my opinion is this, is the community's voted. They've told us, that being the CCSD, that they do want desal. When I first moved here in 89, I was told that I couldn't flush my toilet depending on whether it was yellow or whether it was brown. And I go, what are they talking about? Well, I found out, and that encouraged me to become a director and try and solve the problem. But the project became too real. It got very ugly, and we all know the project was canceled. The general manager was terminated, and 14 years later, we're on a feasibility study, which I'm surprised that the Army Corps of Engineers picked Santa Rosa Creek. You know, I'll be surprised if that becomes the winning choice. Very surprised, in fact. The other design, of course, was ocean intake and ocean outfall with the diffusion system, and they were all approved by the Coastal Commission. It can be done. But whatever the design is, I just want to close on this. Let's think positive. Don't get bogged down in the residents that will come up and tell you that you need to relook at alternatives that have already been looked at. If we've done our research before, we've voted on it, let's stay focused. We're seeking to identify a desal project with a description. Then we'll do the engineering studies, the environmental studies as they become necessary. But let's get the feasibility study done. Thank you.
Mr. Child, thank sage advice from a wise fellow who's been there, done that. So thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. I have a request to speak from Richard Breen.
I think this is the first time I've spoke. I try to stay out of politics in the town because of my position of owning Breen Realty. And it's very interesting listening to Mr. Childs because I remember him quite well back in 1996. We did have an approved project. And I think a lot of Cambrians feel, you know, I just think there's this tremendous effort to preserve what we have, and I just really am saddened by the division that seems to occur when people can't, just work things out. I mean, I contributed to the Fiscalini Ranch. I think we all want the same thing for our families and our children, and I have to say I've been here. I've been in this community for 25 years, and when I moved to Los Osos in 1970, and I think there were about 1,700 people living there then, and here they are 40 years later still arguing over the same thing they were arguing over in 1970 when I moved there. And I moved to Cambria because I think we had a sewer system, and I didn't think we would ever have these kinds of fights. It's starting to resemble what Los Osos is going through. And I agree with what Mr. Childs has said. I've been here so long. I consider myself indigenous, you know, like somebody seems to think that there aren't any Cambrians around here that have lived here for a long time. And I think that's the problem. I think there's a lot of people that have moved here that really love it here. And there's this, I want to pull up the drawbridge mentality. And I honestly believe that, you know, we have exhausted all these other alternatives. We've tried to do reservoirs. We've tried to do Nacimiento water. We've exhausted the state water situation. And this is a path that we're going down. The Army Corps of Engineers, you know, they have the mandate, they have the right, they have the ability to go in and to do this drilling. Obviously, it's a feasibility study. I think it needs to be done if we're going to continue to move forward. We have 655 people still on a waiting list that would love to sue the CCSD for not being able to do anything other than weed whack their lots and pay their taxes to the San Luis County. And anyway, I think that we know the Coastal Commission well enough with their track record that the Coastal Commission is never going to allow a desal plant that is going to allow a runaway growth. There's no one in this town that wants a runaway growth. We have wonderful restaurants. We have a wonderful community. People pull together in this community during adversity. I mean, it was the most unbelievable experience of my life back in 1995 when we flooded and how everyone came to everyone's aid. And people that get injured in town, and we hold these fundraisers, and there are people that die. And you know, this is a great town, and I just feel really saddened when I see this division and people kind of unwilling to, you know, I don't know. It's just, this first time I've spoken probably 15 years, and I just want to say that I think we should proceed with a feasibility study because the Coastal Commission is never going to allow any kind of a desal plant that is going to accommodate any more than the 655 lots that we still have to build out in this town. And I think that those people are going to be very unhappy if they never get a chance to build out. And there's a lot of people waiting to know in terms of selling those properties or keeping those properties, whether we are going forward or we're not going forward. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Green. John McKinnon.
John McKinnon, local resident, 20 years I've been here. I'm in the room. I want to make a point about this project, the specific project of the test wells. We could need this project irregardless of desal. I'm on a committee to look at issues with catastrophic failure of our system. A two-year drought could be a catastrophic situation that could happen. Earthquake can happen. Lots of things can happen. We haven't studied this through, but quite possibly what seems logical to me is that portable desal will be the answer to this issue, a simple way should we have a catastrophic failure. In that case, if we had those wells there and available, we would be ready to hook up. It could be something that, irregardless of desal down the road, we're deciding to do this anyway. So to the gentleman that was speaking to that, well, why are we doing it? Because, you know, we don't have a desal project. We may need it anyways. So it's just another outside-the-box reason that, okay? And I support desal.
Thank you very much, John. I have no more requests to speak, and I don't see anybody else in the audience racing up to the lectern.
Just a couple
please.
Observations. I think it's admirable that everyone in this room is for the positive outcome of Cambria. And the things that you have in your minds, they may be different. But as Rodney King from L.A. Riot fame said, can't we just get along? And I think this is the future. We will get along. We have a prerequisite of one way of attaining a water intake that is being paid for by the federal government. If that doesn't work, there may be alternatives. There will be alternatives. I'm an engineer, and I'm a businessman. I ran a company, and my wife and I started a company. And we have had 20 years of analysis, and we've had at least 10 years of paralysis. And I think what we would have done from a business standpoint with all that data, we would already be in the construction phase of the project, let alone perhaps even completed by now. But this is different. And we are perceived, we are what we are perceived. And what we have is people that have all sorts of different notions. And yes, we have published, and it's available in the library, on the internet, in written form, of the reasons why DSAL has been selected. And I think it's important that we, after we find out if the prerequisite that we're looking for, the intake with the subterranean intake, is successful, that we do have workshops, that we do communicate redundantly, if it be, so that people do understand what they're getting. I have the concerns that other people have of proper project management, good definition of project. I have a concern over the financial wherewithal. It's been written in the Cambrian by very capable people. What are we committing the community to? We need those things defined. They will be defined. And I think what we have to realize, we're here to do the will of the people. We are good stewards of your tax money, and we will use it wisely. And from one position on the board, we will have a desal plant, period. Thank you.
Any other board member comments before we get to a resolution here? Yes, Director Cliff.
I want to thank all the people who came out today, whether you were for or against it. And for many of you, it's not a comfortable feeling to stand there at that podium and express feelings, and I appreciate the fact that that you've done that. I'm going to defer to the attorneys and engineers. I think they've done a great job of explaining the board's position, and no matter what we do today, I want to assure the people that that I, as a particular director, am committed to going forward in this process and as fast as possible. Even though sometimes to some people it may look like we're going slow, some of the times what we're doing is avoiding pitfalls that would just delay it a longer period of time. So I think the three directors who have expressed or answered comments have done an outstanding job, and I agree with all of them.
Any other board member comments? All right. The staff recommendation is to continue this matter until the regular April meeting. Is that correct? And the reason is that we've got really two things to work out. Number one, we've got the responses to all of the comments that have to be put together, collated, and presented to us and to the public. That process isn't finished yet. Secondly, we've got this jurisdictional issue that has come up that was explained by our general counsel. So it seems to me that the most prudent course of action today is to continue this until the April meeting, when we'll take action. Is there a motion to that effect?
President Sanders, excuse me. Before you take action, would you please add the written comments that came in via mail this week to the record?
I'm not going to do that.
Okay.
Because the persons who were here and who spoke at the meeting, their comments aren't really a part of the record. The record was closed at the last meeting when we closed the public hearing. So,
I understood that. I thought they had an opportunity to just submit as a public comment to the meeting, not to the public hearing.
No, we'll just leave them as they are.
Thank you.
They'll be available for anybody to look at if they wish to, but it's not a part of the record. Okay, is there a motion to continue the matter?
I move that we approve Resolution 10-2010.
To approve or to continue it?
To continue it.
Continue it, okay.
But to approve the resolution.
All right. Is there a second to the motion?
I'll second that we continue it to the next meeting in February. What date is it?
In April.
April, let's say.
The regular April board
April
meeting.
April meeting.
Right. You're going backward.
Do we have
a time machine?
I wish I could.
Do we have a problem here with your approving...
Approving the continuation
continuance. Of that, right. Not the
exactly.
adoption and continuation.
Right. Exactly.
Okay.
I was just going to sort that out. Director McKinnon would like to and has made a motion to continue the resolution, consideration of the resolution until the April meeting. It's been seconded. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Board members, I propose we take a very short break thank you, at this time. We'll reconvene at 3:00. We'll get the balance of the meeting underway. Okay, Director D'Amico is... working his way back here. He's having a high-powered conference back there, right. All right, the meeting will come back to order. We have concluded item 8A. We're moving to item 9A under regular business, which is consideration of the negotiated contract with the firefighters. I'm going to ask the general manager for a staff report.
Okay, thank you. We've been negotiating with the International Association of Firefighters. It's the Cambria Firefighters / International Association of Firefighters Local 4635. For today's conversation, I'm just going to call them IAFF, okay? That's the acronym for International Association of Firefighters. It's been almost a year. I think I started negotiating with them about this time, April, May of last year. And their contract expired June 30th of 2009. So you know from prior discussions and staff reports that the IAFF declared impasse and it was over a salary issue. You also know from that staff report that within the CCSD municipal code, the board of directors has some, if you will, leadership with regard to salary issues within negotiations, and those issues were taken up with President Sanders and Director Cliff, or Vice President Cliff, I apologize, in meetings with the IFF. And what you see in my staff report that was drafted were the conclusions of tentative agreements that were made by members of the IFF on the salary issues between the Vice President and President, and then on the other issues that had long ago been tentatively agreed upon. So just in a summary format, you'll see in the fiscal impact section the costs associated with what ultimately became or has become a two-year agreement starting actually tomorrow, basically because it's around a payroll period. It makes it more simple. I do want to point out one correction that I got from Al this morning, only because we were back and forth and back and forth with these negotiations on page 35 of the agenda packet. For FY 2009-2010, I put in there a $16,000 increase in personnel costs, which he had verified, but later came back and said, oh, did that include overtime, which it didn't. So that needs to be $18,000. And therefore, your net increase, the offset's still the same, but the net increase for fiscal year 2009-2010 is closer to $16,000 rather than the $13,800. The others are the same. If for purposes of discussion today, I passed out, and Kathy, as our district clerk, has a copy available of the MOU and the side letter that was signed literally minutes before the meeting started today. I just want to briefly, for the public's information and for yours too, so that it's clear, just tell you the items that were of major change in the Memorandum of Understanding. And they're outlined starting on page 36. The first one was the term. And the direction that I received from the board ultimately during the salary negotiations, again, between the executive committee and IFF was, let's go for this two-year term. And you'll see later on in the number two why that decision was made. For purposes of reference in the MOU, The term is described on page 16. It's section 37, if you'd like to make a note of that, and you'll have that information. For number two, the salary in the PERS retirement and the employee portion, all along the intent has been that the IAFF members make a contribution toward the employee portion of PERS. For the public's information, there are two portions of the PERS retirement. There's an employer portion and there's an employee portion. And for all the years up until the negotiations that we're currently talking about, the CCSD has paid both portions. And quite frankly, in most agencies, that's the way it's been. Of course, with recent discussions concerning PERS and budget constraints, as we've gone through this downed economy, now more agencies are looking at ways that employees can make contributions to the employee portion. In this case, that was what the board directed me to do. So what you see in Section 2 was a negotiated 2% retroactive back to the 7-1, and actually it's July 3rd, okay? We deal with payroll periods. Even though I have 7-1, it's a July 3rd date, exact date. Up until today, because that would be when the agreement would become official tomorrow, they would start their Part B, which means they get their 2% retro check. Starting tomorrow, they would get 4.1% raise, together with them paying 2% of their PERS employee portion. For reference point, pages 13 and 14 describe these items in the MOU, and that would be sections 28B and 31B. So you can see that those are spelled out just as was directed and negotiated. In C, the committee negotiated a cost of living increase for that second year of the agreement, which would begin in 2011 on March 26th. And that would be the same increase that Social Security, United States Social Security recipients receive. And it's based on the index that the U.S. uses. It's a national index. Not to exceed or capped at 2.5%. If there was no Social Security increase or it was negative, the employee pay would not be impacted. So that is in C, and that is described in the MOU in section 31C, page 14. The final item was D, and that was for salary. Effective tomorrow, March 26, any new hire for that would become an IAFF member, they would be responsible for paying 100% of the 9% employee share. And this would not just be agreed upon within the MOU. This would literally become legislation of the CCSD. So it would actually become part of the CCSD municipal code.
Which paragraph were you for that part?
That's in D.
Under longevity?
It's 2D. I'm still on 2D. Oh, it's not in the MOU, so let me get to that discussion, okay? So I just outlined those items. Just put a little star by that one. We're going to come back to 2D, okay? I want to get into that discussion. The rest of these items in 3, I just don't want to bore you with the MOU language clarifications. They're ministerial. They're either typos. We changed district to CCSD. We changed all the union names, all that. Those were long ago agreed upon, and those are within here, and there's just so many of them, it would be ridiculous to even list them all, but they're just very ministerial. A number 4, the acting chief pay, it's on page 15 of the MOU. It's section 33B. That was also tentatively agreed upon by the union several months ago, and that is contained within the MOU. Number 5, the health benefits. Remember the side letters of the SEIU union and those of us in management confidential exempt, we wanted to clarify that it's the lowest cost plan. Well, that's on page 11, 24A. It is now very clear. And actually, all along, the IFF always knew that it was always going to be that the CCSD would pay the premium for the lowest cost health plan. Item 6 on page 37 is the health reimbursement account for the 6 months of this year. And you'll see that as the side letter that's attached to the MOU. It's the same exact side letter that SEIU and the management and confidential exempt employees agreed to. And that was so that the Prop 1A plan could work because those were give backs. Now, the reason it's in a side letter, because it may be confusing, is just because it's a temporary give back. And containing it with the MOU just led to some confusion potentially later on down the line. So that's why it's in the side letter, just like the other side letters. Now let's bounce back to that item. So you'll see you've got the MOU, all the things that you've directed me to do along these negotiations, and you've got the HRA. The one thing that's missing out of here is that 2D. Oh, sorry.
Sorry, before you get to that, can I just ask for a clarification?
Sure.
If you look on page 36, 2B, 4.6 effective March 26, when?
4.1. Oh, that
effect
should be
2010, shouldn't it be?
That should be 2010. Thank you for catching that.
Shouldn't be 12, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Thank you, okay. 2010.
Correct. Okay. And then one other question, since you went to pay, unless you're going to go back to number 24, health benefits on page 37.
No, go ahead.
Is it my recollection, is my recollection correct that there was also some sort of deductible compensation for the fire people? Was there a check given, a $1,300 or $1,100 check given?
That's in the side letter. That's the side letter. That's the health reimbursement account.
Right.
That's the give back, like the rest of us.
Give back meaning it will not be given now?
They won't get the first 6 months just like the rest of us, January
right.
through June.
Give back to the district.
The CCSD.
Okay.
It's a concession, basically, but we just kept it in a side letter so that it's treated just like all the others.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you for catching that typo.
Sure. Right.
Okay, so we're back on 2D, and the one important item was for all new hires. As of this morning, the IFF has concerns about the language, and the language was very simple, and it's not, unfortunately, within this agreement, or it was within a separate side letter, because they had concerns about it being part of the legislation. Now, my understanding with...
Tammy, just to clarify, you're talking about new hires. Paying 100% of the PERS contribution.
Correct.
Okay.
Which has been the direction of this board
right.
and you two negotiated.
Right.
And so now there's just when it becomes part of the legislation, you know, it's not negotiable. It basically isn't. So there's concerns
right.
about that now. Now, a question. So there's no side letter. There's no reference to that. Just conferring with district council, he brings up an extremely valid point. If there's ever going to be anybody hired under this agreement, because I've signed it. You haven't ratified it, but I've signed it based on the authority that you've granted me. This will always be the prevailing document. It would precede the code. So until we get their agreement on the side letter number 2 that says they agree that all new hires will pay 100% of the 9% of the employee share, after going through this whole exercise, I'd have to ask that you postpone this.
Yeah, I'm concerned, too, that through no fault of the general manager and perhaps through no fault of the firefighters, this didn't come together until shortly before the meeting. So I think it would be wise if we all had time to read it and digest it so that we know precisely what we're voting on. Sounds like you've already read it, Director D'Amico. You went right to the one typo in it, which was very good.
Yeah. Well, I would like to, and that's why I was going to congratulate you and thank the firefighters for the consideration of 2D and acceptance of it.
You bet.
I'm a news junkie on the CNBC and the like, and I get these alerts that come through. There's also a site which is monitors all state agencies and has they put out a daily synopsis by states, which has significant essentially financial employee because of the issues we're in. This morning there was an alert that says, and these are easy, you can probably Google it, that the unfunded mandates in 50 states for pension and welfare now total $1 trillion. And again, this is, and that's why I was going to bring it out in a positive note, saying that we are not trying to signal out, if you will, or go after our firemen, who are wonderful and hardworking people. But the fact is that PERS by itself and the historical establishment of that has said that 9% is their portion of it, which I think is fairly generous even to begin with. But so going to what has been established on a state level, in the light of where we are with the unfunded, whether it's California or any other state, I think it was $158 billion in South Carolina. They used that, and then they projected what it was nationwide, over $1 trillion. We, again, are not asking for rollback, and neither is any other state government at this point, other than unless they go bankrupt, which may be seen at some point in time. But what we're saying is, prospectively, we want to return to what was essentially documented in the whole PERS structure for the last, I don't know how many years, I'm sure it's quite a long time, and I don't think that we're not then infringing on our existing group, and it just says when the new people come in, we are rolled back to where it probably was at some point in time, even with the Cambria. So I would hope that you get a good resolution of this, and I would suggest, yes, we must put it off until this is clarified.
Any other comments?
I would say without D, A, B, and C is of no use at all, and that blows the whole ball game. I'm very surprised by that. It's because it isn't affecting present employees. It's the future employees, and it has to be that way. Otherwise, not only this community, but this state is going to be in deep trouble for such actions, if you will.
Absolutely. That is what was negotiated. Perhaps it's a, as the movie Cool Hand Luke is famous for, what we have here is a failure to communicate. So
let's hope so.
Attributing it now to a communication problem, we do need to get it resolved, absolutely. Director Clift.
Yeah, for the public, the agenda shows a 2% retroactive to 7/1/09 through March 25th, and then B, a 4.1 effective. That 4.1 effective is over the 7/1/2008 salary. So it isn't 2% and then another 4.1.
That's right.
It is 2% retroactive, and then as of March 26, it's 4.1%, but that includes, for all intents and purposes, that 2% previous amount. But it's written that way in the MOU. It says effective, you know, it will receive an increase of 4.1 over the 7/1/2008 salary.
And the net effect is it's a 2% raise.
Yeah.
In other words, what's important to them is that they have 2% in their pocket, and that's what it nets out to after you.
Right. I just didn't want people to think you, well, you got 2% and then you got a 4%.
So
which
right.
is 6. That's
exactly.
not the case. Okay.
Very, very well put.
I didn't mean to blow over those other two resolutions. Just so you know, they're PERS required. 08-2010 is the one that we have to change the percentages that are paid for retirement. And then 09-2010, they just, when we were calling to get that reso, they saw that we had not done one for the Internal Revenue Code that shows these are pre-tax. So,
before we act on this matter, I'd like to thank Director Clift for weighing in with me on this. We had some extended sessions with the firefighters. We had one meeting where I think just about all of the firefighters who are covered by the MOU were present. That includes the captains and the engineers. And it was very productive. We had a really good exchange of ideas, and Director Clift is a very, very good negotiator. So did a great job. With that, gentlemen, if there's a motion to continue this until the April meeting.
So move.
Is there a second to move it? To continue it, excuse me?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to continue item 9A to the regular April meeting of the Board of Directors. All those in favor say aye.
Discussion?
Oh, discussion,
so
absolutely.
You know, you got to follow.
Oh. Yeah, yeah.
Just a question and a comment for the general manager. As general manager points out, it's a year and a half or more in the making, and you know, she has husbanded this through the process to this fruition, which I have to say is, as somebody said before, there are two parties to every negotiation, and I think this has been a good settlement, and I hope that the firefighters appreciate the constraints that we were under, I believe the community's under, to get some cost control without adversely affecting them either retroactively or going forward. Having said that, if we wait until April, then these dates would change then, but we're publicly, I mean, we still have to settle from the 7-1 on, and we can work that through. Okay, thank you.
Let me say, too, before I forget, I was remiss in leaving the general manager out of the accolades for negotiating. She did exactly what she was instructed to do by the board, and then Director Clift and I waltz in and bring home the deal. You know, there, don't read anything into that. It was certainly not a failure on the general manager's part that an agreement wasn't reached when she was negotiating, quite the contrary. So I want to make that clear.
Yeah, and I wanted to say that, too. She had to clean up after.
Yeah, after, she had to clean up the mess of
after what we did. But also, yeah, she had to communicate with us several times to make sure we
we did what we did. The store.
But for the public, it's also important to, I think, to note that this particular contract, if it goes through this way, does change the way we're looking at employee contracts, in that changing the contribution limits of employees to the PERS, and the concept of not simply raises but costs of living increases that are also attached to a index that's understandable by our community members. Many of our community members receive Social Security. They understand how much that raise is. It's not based on something like L.A. Central or something that they don't necessarily have a response to. So I think it's an interesting thing that we had to get across to the firefighters because they happen to be first. And so I do, although we'll go back and talk about this other part, I do want to express my appreciation to that, to the union, for willing to sit down and talk about things that were a little bit different than what they were normally used to discussing.
Absolutely. And I think it would be a mistake for the public to get the impression that somehow these were tough union negotiations. These are good guys and women. I want to express my personal thanks to them for the cooperative kind of mode in which they approached the negotiations. All right, we have a motion and a second on the table to continue this until the April board meeting. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. That leads us to the second public comment period. I have no request to speak for the second. Yes, Amanda Rice. Come forward.
Put it in a slip, I swear.
Okay. I believe
it. I don't know where it went, but I didn't speak at the first public comment period, so of course I have to. I just had three things. The well production charts used to be part of the staff report, and I know the graphs weren't in there this time, but we haven't been getting the production report for a while. I was just wondering if that was going to possibly be put back in, because I know that at least me and a couple of other geeks that like to look at that stuff. Also, I'd like to raise an issue. You may want to investigate a possible leak on Ardith between Wilcom and Leona. There seems to be water undermining a bad pothole that seems to be just getting worse. And I thought maybe it was the rains, or maybe it was just continuing water underflow, but it may be a leak.
We'll
and it's
it
on
out.
The westbound side of Ardith between Wilcom and Leona. I don't even know if there's a water pipe under there. anywhere nearby.
I think it's a natural spring. Did you call it in? Or
I called the county and let them know.
Okay. But you didn't call the CCSD?
No, because I didn't know. Who do I call on that?
Just our office.
Okay.
We do a service. Okay. But I'll report it. But I believe that's a natural spring area. I drive down that road all the time, too,
okay.
At home. So
okay. And then two quick things. Oh, sorry. Two quick things on the expenditure report and then one other thing. I noticed on the expenditure report there was a $29,000 payment to SWCA for the Fiscalini Ranch Master Plan. How much more do we owe? How much more is going? I mean, how much more are we paying on that? Is that the last one?
That was the final payment.
Oh, yay. Okay, good. Thank you very much. And then there was a payment for $130 to the Creekside Inn for the Santa Rosa Creek Watershed Management Meeting. And I just wasn't sure what that was for, since the watershed management plan meeting happens at Rabobank. I just wasn't, it's attributed to permit. Thank you for the time.
Thank you. Anybody else in the audience wish to address the board during the second public comment period? Seeing no one, we are adjourned to closed session.